Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, November the 17th, 2009, and this is hour 110 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Hello, Michael.
Hello. Hello to you, Curtis, and everyone else out there.
Hello. Good to have you back, and somebody was sending, I didn't send this to you, but somebody was sending your hour 106 and 107 to people, and there were like 400 and some people that listened to that 1 hour the other day. I was surprised. That's a lot. You must have said something in there that got people to say, listen to this fella from Maui, Hawaii. And it's good that people are listening. But
if people are interested in, you know, we are not alone, and it's no big revelation to the religions of the world. Our problem is that many of them have created gods out of these celestial beings of material, you know, having technology that's far ahead of us. You know, some that are not too far off, and others which are, you know, just light years away from our technology. Anytime you can use technologies like with this levitator or the conveyor beam of light, that blue-violet beam of light that carried me up. It's an amazing technology. I mean, I'm still me, you know, I didn't fall apart or anything. It just was amazing that, you know, what appeared to be a beam of light could do that. That's pretty far out.
Could you feel you were supported, like sitting on a seat, or did you feel like you were suspended in water?
No, I didn't feel like I was floating. I felt like I was seated. Yeah. So it was interesting because I remember being right side up, basically in a seated position, just riding up on this beam of light. Yeah.
And how far did you go up that beam of light? I mean, how long was that?
It stretched across my yard up to the ship, which is about 40 feet, I think. Maybe 50.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, to get to the height where the ship was, which was considerably above the ground, well, you know, I'm just estimating it was in probably maybe 50 to 60 feet, yeah.
But then you said the ship actually touched down in your backyard also?
No, it sort of put down a beam of light which left that one circular area in the backyard that nothing seems to like to grow on. It was sort of like an anchor, you know, you might say.
Mm-hmm. An anchor to hold the ship in place? Well,
I don't know.
Pulled you up the thing?
The ship seemed to float so ever, like a floating, and then the beam of light came down and formed these four rays, and the one that hit the ground, of course, was the longest, bright white it was, and when I looked at it, it formed a beautiful cross.
So the ship felt like it was. Did this feel like it was something you remembered from yesterday? Your memory's so good, or is it really cloudy? It's been several decades now, and you just remember a little bit of it.
No, it's quite clear.
Clear.
Yeah. And, having it clear, a memory clear like that, it has been, I guess, reinforced And one of the things that is important, I noticed, is that they're able to replay your memories at a level of reality that is extremely real. So your memory becomes very, very, very like you're reliving it in times in which they refresh your memory, and brought, you know, to light many of the things that I speak about right now at the proper time. You know, I went through basically my life growing up without much detail. You know. But of course, this beautiful cross was something that I never forgot. I immediately remembered, and it was it brought back a really good memory, good feeling.
Mm-hmm. A good feeling.
Yeah, and it was a positive, very positive experience. Mm-hmm. And as far as the details, they weren't, you know, allowed at the time for me to remember all the details. And now, of course, they've all been more or less released.
Hmm.
So you might say it forms sort of a religious experience in its form, but not necessarily, you know, to the point where, you know, it became the center pivotal experience in my faith in God. No, it wasn't that. It was fairly normal as far as developing faith in God through the ministries that exist here on the planet. You know, it wasn't something that was disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now I realize why they had released me, because it was very important that I don't perceive Nella as a god or a goddess. And I never did, but that was one of the things that I remember distinctly that they were pleased about, that Bhutan and Nella seemed pleased that I didn't view them as gods.
Mm-hmm. I guess they've had that before?
I'm sure, yeah. It's a level of maturity in terms of where we are in our development, you know, our consciousness. And I believe that probably many of us would meet and not, you know, go immediately crazy, bonkers, but meet them would realize they're people and they indeed are not gods. So we're not very far off from the revealing, the great revealing. But in the meantime, there's a lot of small things that are being shown around here and there, around the world.
Mm-hmm. When you were being taken up that beam, do you remember being frightened, scared, or did you actually feel that you knew what was at the other end of the beam?
I didn't know what was at the other end of the beam, but as I approached, I seemed to progress up the beam of light, approximately that comfort speed, like about that of an escalator, very similar, not rushed and all of a sudden, you know, bang, you're in another spot. You know, it was a comfortable thing. And also, like I did describe, my neighbor was coming down another beam of light, going the other way with a very blank look on her face. But yes, as I approached the ship, or this luminous sphere, I wanted to see a ship. I really wanted to see a ship, but I instead was just given this luminous glow. It was truly, you know, not a riveted, fabricated piece of craftsmanship. You know, it wasn't that at all.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Wow. So you weren't nervous going up there? I mean, just
That was quite comfortable.
And you could see the ship on the way up?
See, I could see what I call the star. Yeah, starship.
Starship.
Because it was so bright and illuminated, luminous.
And this is the same star you saw in the sky coming closer to you and actually coming down close to your house.
Oh, yeah, it was the ship all along. Yeah.
All along.
Yeah.
And your memory of this came back really strong, what, after you started recording or before?
Oh, before. That's when I began to realize that the timing was getting close to the task at hand, to be part of the educational process, you might say. There's many, many people out there who are researchers, and they are using whatever techniques and they like to use in their interviews and discoveries, and putting, bits and pieces together. People like Linda Moltenhall, who's really never experienced any of that herself. There's a lot of those that are out there. But for myself, or even like a person like Whitley Strieber, who has made, firsthand contact, are in a different group, of truth revealers.
Mm-hmm. And what do you mean he's in a different group?
He's one who has experienced the different, he's written books on greys and all of these beings, and they look like that. Yeah, many of them do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what he comes up with is also blocked. I think he has a prophet motive, of course, in his work and his work as an author. And so you might say there's a lot of storytelling involved. His point of view would be one in which is that of an author trying to sell books.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question from Andrea. She writes, "Hello, Curtis and Michael." And it's funny that you were talking about this without really. Anyway, regarding a question from Hour 109 about the material suns written about in the Urantia book, who stand 8 feet tall and glow with a divine violet. By the way, that is a quote from paper 51, section 1. These particular kind of material suns are called planetary sons and daughters, and they are also known as Adam and Eve. Their mission on Earth is written about in papers 51, 73, 74, 75, and 76 of the Urantia book. Each planet gets an Adam and Eve when the planet is ready for a genetic upbringing of its stock. They are made immortal. But unfortunately, on Earth, their mission was aborted, causing them to become mortal. And you can read the details about that incident in those papers. I learned about this topic in my previous Urantia book, Internet School Class, that was called The Adamic Dispensation. Thanks to Michael and Curtis for getting me interested in the Urantia book, which I believe has had a very positive impact in my life. Andrea from Chula Vista, California.
One of the things that is important for us to remember in light of the Urantia book is that the Urantia book in itself is not a complete work of text. That is able to be translated or brought into our level of understanding easily because of the limits of our language and our ability to perceive. Morancho, individuals, the Adamic individuals, the Adams and Eves, are initially material beings, but they're not. They're of morancho material too, so they actually are not mortal. Yes, it's true that the dispensation of the Adam and Eve here on Earth was a problem. It was a genetic ploy that was played on them in concept to try to rush or upstep human genetic, the human genome, in a way to which was not normal. They actually have a lot more knowledge that they're not telling you in the Urantia book. The knowledge that the Adams and Eves have are quite substantial when it comes down to their own makeup and the makeup of the genetics. Their genetic upstepping is not only because they carry with them a higher level of genetics, it's because they also carry with them a high knowledge of genetics. And to the point in which they could manipulate the genetics in a way that wasn't approved of, because as a result, this concept of the initial sin in which all of humankind is got, which is basically a genetic problem. You know. However, that genetic problem, which is basis, which is serves as basis for the seat of the fractal, of the divine fractal, that seat wasn't wiped out. So a large portion of the human race is still able to seat the thought adjuster in their mortal body and commune with it. But many people have a lot of difficulty being able to communicate with the thought adjuster because of this genetic ploy. However, there are ways in which a bridge was essentially made across that gulf of somehow emptiness. This particular void has been tried to be filled by so many things, and people always have these stories about how nothing could fulfill them until they realized and found God, found at least a pathway to communicate or commune with God. And that was what was the biggest problem of the Urantia Adamic default that happened.
You say that was the biggest problem?
The biggest problem, yeah. It didn't follow the normal line of genetic upstepping. It actually tried to eradicate the seat of the thought adjuster.
And why? And what happened there? I mean, what caused that to happen?
It was partly because of the concept of liberty from what was perceived as an artificial implant of rule in an individual's life, so they would truly be people wouldn't truly be free, but what it really ended up becoming was the other way around. It became a way in which people end up becoming enslaved because of that disconnect with the thought adjuster, or the disconnect with God. And as a result, it was used effectively, and it was always meant to be used effectively to rule this race of this race of human beings. And you can see, I mean, how you just look around, how the rule of a will of a few can, you know, dictate a great amount of just a greater, much greater mass of individuals.
Well, the communication was quite different when Adam and Eve were here.
Yes, when Adam and Eve were here, many of the communications circuits were still in place. They were being taken down, but they ended up having a pretty tough role, essentially, to try to complete the upstepping of humanity without being influenced by the Luciferian philosophy of false liberty. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the real purpose of Adam and Eve being placed on this planet was to really develop the human race.
The human race, yes, but not in a direct sense. There was other interference later on, but the human race was upstepped you might say, in a certain kind of breeding program that was passed through their line, the line of not the Adam and Eve, but the line of another group of leaders who were material beings and had ability to have. They could see the women. There's some evidence of some of these the practice of that in some of the ancient temples and stuff. So how they would try to seed their genetic lineage through into, you know, all the different tribes of the earth.
That must have been a huge undertaking.
It was, a pretty huge undertaking, but it was also one that seemed a bit promiscuous, you know. Sexually, the priests themselves were the progenitors or the carriers of the genome in which what they wanted to pass along. Because they had in themselves also contained certain amount of it. Was supposedly, you know, going to help humankind, but ended up being more of a short circuit than a true upstepping. Well, you can look around and you can see that our world is terribly confused yet, and it's not ready for not ready yet. Those who are able to commune with the thought adjuster are much, much more able to become universe citizens than those who are were in that program less limited and open to the manipulation of these supposed rulers, ruling classes.
The timetable between the time Adam and Eve were here and the view of the celestials of us and how we're doing here on Earth, what do the celestials think of our timetable as far as our development from the time Adam and Eve were here?
Well, the Adam and Eve are here. I mean, humanity was already, you know, fairly well progressed. Natural man had, you know, it's basically come out of the Stone Age. Moving from that to more civilized manner was one of the tasks involved in the Adam and Eve. Bringing civilization, education, and, you know, the higher levels of agriculture to the planet was an important factor that they also brought with them.
What do the celestial beings think of our level of being civilized? I mean, we're still having wars. That still hasn't ended.
One of the important things is that the use of the fiat currency requires those who back up that currency to have a certain kind of something to back it up, whether it be real, tangible whether it's a currency or, you know, let's say gold or something like that, or it be some other strength. And generally that strength would be its ability to make war, essentially the kind of strength which can strike down any opposition. And you can field an army, field weapons of mass destruction. You have this threat behind the power of your currency. So the reasons for all of the war can be traced down generally to how they were working in the realm of the economy and the currencies and the civilizations that relied on the modern society or that was patterned after the initial introduction of currency, whether it be gold or seashells or whatever it may be. But the idea of this promissory currency or actual fiat currency is very old. I mean, whether it be held as gold, which of course, you know, to a lot of primitive people was like the shiny metal is not good for much, you know.
I mean, the primitive people wouldn't have any use for gold.
Well, you ended up using it more like jewelry than anything else.
Jewelry. Mm-hmm.
And its term for a medium of exchange was not necessarily widespread. Currency today is probably the biggest blame for war around. Anything comes down to the root cause of wars is currency, it's the fiat currency, whether it be the oil dollar, or the dollar that was given immense strength at one time, and now it's going to have to bend its knees to a new order of currency. And it's one in which is at this cusp of a new generation of civilization, and one in which the old ways that this one leader who's no longer leading this planet, he was a high order being, and he introduced the currency into the world, and the idea of money in exchange, and that's going to change. I remember how things were when people were knit together relatively close, and they tended to have excess productivity in one thing or another, and one I remember we never exchanged money. A lot of times we just have a little bit extra fruit and we take it to our neighbors or our friends who seem to enjoy it, so we take it over there. And then when they had something, you know, I remember whatever it may be, so extra tomatoes, take over mangoes, and next thing you know, we got cabbages and you know, beans or something on our doorstep. Mm. This cashless trading and bartering was something that we never even did because it was required. We just did it because we had, you know, extra. So we diversified, our lives were diversified, produce was diversified because of our disengagement with you know, the market economy that bases itself on exchange of money. And we had a much closer group growing up, when I was growing up. And that eventually, you know, changed a lot. But it still exists right now. So what I'm saying in that is that money wasn't always necessary in terms of people's productivity. Some people had abilities or techniques or craftsmanship, you know, that were specialized. And many times the exchange for that was not in terms of money. It was an exchange for service or product, mm-hmm. without money in between. So anyway, going back to the base root of the idea was that when they look at the wars in the world, they can see immediately that it's a byproduct of currency, money.
Mm-hmm.
And money in itself is not a an evil, but you know, the whole power behind it can be construed as a evil lever on people's lives.
Well, these wars are just a big money maker for a lot of companies. They're not trying to make a living any other way. They want to make a living selling weaponry that they don't have to bid on. They can just name their own price, which is a huge price, and ever since President Eisenhower said, beware of the military-industrial complex, and that was in 1952, he could see that this military thing was really out of hand with making money.
And well, yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, the problem was also the fact that there was some demand for better and better weaponry and more sophisticated weaponry. Along with that, refining of technologies came those ideas that you had to get it for whatever price because nobody else knew how to make them. You know? And that's the biggest problem in backing up U.S. dollar was to continue to have, you know, have that big stick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it that said, you know, you can walk softly, but make sure you carry a big stick, you know.
Yeah, well, we certainly have been the warmongers of the world. It seems that we just want to have wars all the time.
Yeah, so I guess it's not we, it's the system of backing up the whatever,
yeah, it's
whatever
not we.
Currency it may be.
It's not we, right.
Yeah, it's just, you know, if it's not based on a commodity that of exchange that is, has a basis of value, then it's going to be backed up with some other power. And, of course, the power of productivity or the engine of productivity that a good good currency has will just continue to be like a, you know, a fertilizer, and it makes everything go better, mm-hmm. versus having a currency like that needs to be backed up with weapons of warfare, and the ultimate power behind it. There's no power in this world as powerful as the United States in terms of making war, and that's what backs up the dollar. And when it comes right down to it, that's what is seen as your basic question was, what do they think of it? They know exactly, and they're seeing this change right now. And in fact, they knew this change, this was going to come. They showed me that this whole fiat currency, this whole thing was going to start to fall apart, and they let me know about it in terms of a full waking vision. So, you know, I am watching it unfold.
Well, you're watching it unfold, and they're watching it unfold.
Mm-hmm. And that's an important factor, is that to be caught up in the middle of the problems that can occur because of a failing economy.
Well, you and I have both heard many people say, why don't they get involved and sort of direct us to a more peaceful lifestyle and a better living conditions? I mean, actually trying to make us more civilized or more, because some of these tribes in these places in the Amazon, we think of us as more civilized than them, but they're quite civilized compared to how we conduct ourselves. Just seems there's way too much violence toward humanity from other humans. Isn't there any time when they just have said to you, or have you asked them, you know, what can you do? Or is there something you can do personally, or?
Well, speaking, well, that was one of the first things I said, is that don't blame me for all these wars. And if anybody can do them, look at what you guys have here, and why don't you do something? But this is the point in which you just gave me that look, and quietly felt sorry, knowing full well that they've tried. But they gave me a good level of introduction into what's going up in the rest of the celestial community. And I'm here having agreed to help in the task of putting away all of those things. And the first things after you have to address is, do we really want to stay engaged with a economy based on a fiat currency that has its basis not necessarily anymore in productivity and bettering the planet through sharing of technology, but having the ability behind it to make war. One time the United States was producing, as far as industrialized technologies, the greatest inventive. We still maintain a great amount of inventiveness because of what we are as a free society, given the amount of ability a person can reserve for themselves, time for them to become creative. The problem is that in a society that has a lot of time and some money, we become more people who want to just play around with our short little lives, and then sort of never really make a genuine contribution to the uplift of our own society. And as a result, we spend a lot of time creating these, you know, gargantuan cities like Las Vegas, you know, which is built up on just playing, not necessarily producing anything except playing around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the betterment of society, you know, is an important factor in how free society can share with others. Now, they have a lot to share with us, but because of the freedom and our way of going around using our creativity has in some areas impressed them with our ability to have art and creative inventiveness. But in many ways, it gets always perturbed around because of the need for profit, the need for being engaged with the present economic system.
And I mean, this has always come to mind all the time, but I've asked you this before, but have you gone into your backyard recently and tried to call them again?
Well, you know, they've called me. I did tell you that one night I never really went out to Skyview, but I was kind of pressured to go out there and put my lounge chair out there and then, you know, just look up at the sky. And it wasn't long before, you know, I saw four different lights in the sky that tracked a pretty fast track, stopped and turned and then moved on. And this is something that an aircraft doesn't do.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened. And then I've taken the time out to go out there on my own without, you know, having any pressure to go out there and go look. And there's nothing happening there. You know, it's basically a normal sky. So, yeah, they're telling me that they're still in touch, but as far as me, you know, having them jump on the whim of my will to desire, hey, make a show for me, it's not happening.
Mm-hmm. Or let me borrow one of your old spacecraft that just doesn't go very fast, but you can go to Belgium or wherever you want to go.
Well, yeah, that's getting into, you know, the idea of using their, you know, their stuff for what you want to.
Mm-hmm. What you want to use it for?
Yeah. Well. But much of what we have here has to be is really discovered semi on our own. But a lot of it is really, if we have the time, it will be given to us through our inventive consciousness.
Well, we've read a lot of stories that we've already built these craft and they're.
I don't know about that, but it'd be kind of interesting to see if we've got technologies that are able to levitate without the need for lift, like the wings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Be very interesting. But we've got enough things going on over here that allows us to just work on what we have.
So the celestial
most important thing that everyone, whether it be a 1,000 years ago, or 2,000 years ago, or 1,000 years in the future, is what we are as beings realizing that we really don't have long lives. But we have a given amount of time to develop the vehicle, the true vehicle for eternal life, which is a developed soul. And that developed soul is essential and can be developed to a great degree right here in our lives today. If we simply are able to pass the Adamic default, the Adamic problem, and have a real relationship with the divinity within ourselves, the divine fractal, the thought adjuster, and have that truly a divine love affair that goes on forever and builds this celestial, true celestial ship, which is able to transcend space and time. And many times you can actually do some of these translations from within the body. So these are the extensions past mortality and past being only stuck within a three-dimensional world. You know, can move past that and develop that additional dimensional being. That's why the seven levels beyond are much more than we actually have right here.
The seven circles?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most important task. And if we think of their technology truly as only being, you know, some machinery, then we limit ourselves to really becoming beings that are eternal in our consciousness, that are able to transcend time and space and dimension, having a real vehicle of transcending all of that. Without the soul, you haven't got it. You know, you may have mind, you might have spirit, you might have body, but you don't have that ship. So when you ask about a ship, it's really your soul. Your soul is the ship that every man has to develop. You know, and you know, you can go out and buy your favorite polish and polish your car. And then you can get your, you know, thing and make your tires all shiny and new looking and, you know, and do all of that and polish up your earthly vehicle, your car. But really, when it comes right down to it, we have a ship, a soul ship that needs to be attended to and matured and grown. So that is the real purpose in life. So you're asking whether, you know, having a convenient little ship. It's not that level of technology and development. It's, you know, having a ship to just go a little bit faster across or not use fuel. It's the same thing. It's just, you know, it's, you're not asking for what they really have for us. And what when it comes down to the transition between our body that, you know, is mortal and moves on to more ancient levels of existence, the body needs to have a soul transmission, a platform of translation, and that soul is it. And we possess one, which was almost removed from us genetically.
Was almost removed from
us. It was almost removed. The seed of the thought adjuster on ourselves, the soul, was almost removed. Yeah. So we would essentially have been very smart animals. But and you say it yourself that, you know, yeah, there are many human beings running around as very smart animals because they act that way. Yeah, because they haven't got in touch with what they have within themselves, the divinity within themselves, to create this wonderful vehicle of transmigratory ability to transmigrate yourself from physical body to Morancha body. You know, and be able to even create Morancha technologies that can encapsulate mortal beings and take them all over to Saturn.
So you said we really have a soul ship.
Really, that's our real ship that gives us the ability to transcend time and space and life and continue on. So our consciousness and our brain work is true. You know, our mind is wired electrochemically, and we have a very extremely powerful, sophisticated computer. Yes, but that's not our soul. We have a body, but that is able to experience this world and cause us to move around, and even we can create technology and machinery to assist in our in our expansion of within this our realm in which we live through our bodies. But that's not our soul. And we even have our emotional seat and our spiritual energies, motives, but that's not our soul. Our soul really is constructed between all of that and our divine fractal. And that soul seat is, once implanted with all of that, able to transmigrate into another physical, moronial body. Body that doesn't require the kind of food that we eat. It doesn't procreate. We don't have the ability to have male or female. It's a different kind of body.
Well, our soul is for a different type of transportation that we haven't really experienced in our lifetime.
There are people who are able to, and because of their soul development, actually make these transitory excursions from our normal seated position in our life, in our consciousness, in our bodies, in our minds, and expand ourselves beyond that. One of the most basic ones is moving through telepathic communication. And that has always been taught as prayer in the religions, prayer. But prayer is telepathic communication.
Is there a way we can be more connected with our soul? Or more, I almost want to say in control of our soul, but...
Well, the soul has a... it's sort of in between ourselves and the thought adjuster, the divinity. What we do on one side of it, there is almost a reactive nature on the opposite side from the thought adjuster. As we gain the divine nature, the divine on the opposite side, through the soul, gains some of our nature and experientially implants them in our soul. Our soul is much more than a recording device. It is actually who we are.
But you said our soul is our ship.
Yes. Without it, you couldn't move.
Without our soul, we couldn't move.
Yeah, you'd be a lost soul, you'd be a ghost.
Oh, a lost soul, right.
Yeah, you'd be like, just could haunt someplace. Yeah.
It haunts someplace, right?
Yeah. It would be like disconnected. Yeah.
Oh. We would actually be disconnected then if we didn't have a soul.
Yeah, it would be disconnected, yeah.
Disconnected with our thought adjuster?
Yes. Yeah. Sort of like, it's not a very nice place to be.
Yeah, drift.
Yeah, drift, yeah.
And to be reconnected with our soul?
It's to be reconnected with our thought adjuster. So the two somehow are inextricably tied together in ways that are, you know, some of it is described in the Urantia book, but the Urantia book disconnects from that and says it's really a personal thing that really you arrive at through a, you know, a truly personal means. But one of the greatest advantages of it all is we become truly able to transcend higher and higher levels of being until, you know, we can actually exceed many of those who are like the Adams and Eves we mentioned earlier. We go beyond that in terms of level.
And this is because of our association and our connection with our thought adjuster.
Right. And having gone all the way down, having been a mortal being. Now, the Adam and Eve of Earth became mortal, so they essentially can progress beyond the seed of Adam and Eve, if they wanted to, because of that experience. There are many celestial beings who want to be given the chance to become mortal and to have that experience of mortality, because they can never move to higher levels of being, of consciousness, if they don't first descend. As limited as we are, it is a great, tremendous testing and proving ground for celestial service, much more powerful than being basically in a perfect world.
Would you say that the thought adjuster, I'm saying this because Paul from Quebec said he has a little difficult time thinking of the thought adjuster. He almost thinks of them as God.
One of the important factors that we have to remember is that along with the thought adjuster, this divine fragment within ourselves, there's the energy and fire of the Holy Spirit that ignites our spirit. It's sort of like a turn the light on concept of the energy. So that that relationship becomes alive, vibrant and real. And initially, the initial press is that we try to seek out and find the fact that we need to develop our soul and our thought, that we need to develop a relationship with God through our divine practice within ourselves. We've been given that bridge through Christ Jesus, who the Creator Son actually had to come in, do a great big repair job on this broken seat that was tried to be destroyed by the Adamic default and the genetic breakup. So when people are talking about, what religion is talking about, how the seed of or how sin or something like that was forgiven or something in terms of this missing part or the connection made good again through the Creator Son, Christ Jesus. That is the actual truth. It really, really needs to be done. But once that actually happens, the full development of the soul starts in a progression that is unbelievably personalized just for you.
Unbelievably personalized.
Yeah, you really will. The dimensions that suddenly become real to you, the extent of you seemingly being able to touch the untouchable, to make the rain come when you will it, to make it go away when you don't want it, to turn a tornado away from you, and to make a sick person well, or yourself become well. All of this is what I'm saying. It's almost unbelievable, because that's not natural, but it's become a part of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, the soul is definitely a part of us, mm-hmm. and it's a...
And it's also that gateway to a much greater level of reality in our lives. Even for real, tangible objects in our life, they can come into just being brought in front of you, almost given to you, because of your relationship with God.
Well, we all seem to take these steps getting closer, just listening to what you have to say. And I'm noticing an hour went by already, and I guess it's time to say aloha. Don't mean to say goodbye, but because I feel like we just started. But well, it's it goes by very quickly. And this has been very interesting about Adam and Eve. And thank you, Andrea, for bringing that in. And we'll talk to you next time, Michael.
Okay, aloha.
Okay, aloha.